It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
All right, closet busters, it's time to wake up, because you know what? We're going to kick down those closet doors. We're going to step out. We're going to step up, and we're going to step into some pretty interesting discussion right now. We're going to talk kind of lady to lady, then lady to guy, and then lady to guy, gay guy sort of stuff, because you know what? Sometimes we need to hear what the ladies really have to say. And it's been a while since I've had, like, a woman on the show where we talked about what women want. Now, some of you may be going, oh, cool, this is going to be all about a lesbian sort of focus. Well, we're going to go that route. But we're also going to talk about what women want and why men can't hear it. And we're also going to talk about what women want and why men can't hear it, so that the gay guys can sort of start dialing into, guess what? This is part of your journey too, because we have this beautiful feminine energy within us as men. Whether you're gay or straight, it's there, guys. So get over it right now, okay? But that feminine energy is kind of our radar to what you guys want. So I know I've just thrown a whole lot of stuff out there for us to cover in the next 30 minutes. But I also know that my guest, which some of you who've been listening to the podcast for a while will recognize her as having been on the show not too long ago with her counterpart, talking about love and relationships, sex and all that good stuff, guilt and shame. And I enjoyed the conversation so much with her. And I missed her. I decided I wanted to have Natalie back. Natalie Bartanian. She's a fellow coach, love and relationship expert. And I'm going to tell a little story about Natalie and I. We met.
Yay.
Yeah, we met.
I love stories.
We met a little, not quite a year ago, actually, at World Domination Summit. And no, it wasn't some kinky sex place we were at. It's actually a very beautiful entrepreneurial makers and shakers in the world conference. And her and her guy, Bob, at the time were doing like these great conversations around sex and relationships and being entrepreneurs and all this stuff. And then we ended up at the closing party, and I remember us having some beautiful glasses of wine and drinks together, and we just bonded, didn't we?
Yeah, I know. I was like, I feel like I've known you my whole life.
I know, and then it's taken us almost a year to actually get you guys back on podcast, but I'm glad we're here. So I'm just really excited to have now time with you to kind of have a girlfriend chat about this love and relationship stuff.
So, I love girlfriends.
So I'd love to start with a simple question. And I know it's a simple question, but it's a biggie. You know, why is it so hard for people to really hear? And I'm going to say people, because I don't want to like do the gender thing yet. But why do you think sometimes it's really hard for people to hear what women really desire and want? Because it happens between women as well. I know that. Not just lesbians, but I'm talking women to women. Sometimes it's here, our dear, each other. And then, of course, you put in the masculine energy, and us guys, we just don't listen to shit. So I know you delve in this a lot of being heard and being seen. So why do you think it's hard sometimes for women not to be heard the way they need to?
Yeah. I mean, I'm even thinking about, you know, past relationships with male friends or, you know, like ladies I've been involved with, and just thinking about it. I think, I mean, we just see the world through our own lens, you know, and it's like, even if someone is saying the exact same words as you are, I think we always are going to look at it through our own lens. And again, it's not a good or bad thing at all, but it's just how we're wired. It's like we have to teach ourselves to really try and pay attention to someone else and put ourselves in their shoes and just be like, wait, they might not want the same thing as me. They might actually have a different way of looking at something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like this constant reminder around it. Because I mean, even the other day someone said, you know, this thing with genders, and I guess it could even be considered with like feminine, masculine energy, whatever you want to call it, but Like, we just basically think the person that we're dating, we want them to basically be us in another body, you know?
Like, right.
The whole thing about women wanting men that are basically, like, ladies with penises, right. You know? It's just, like, we want who we are, basically, in a relationship. And so it's hard to see someone else wanting something else. We're like, wait, you're supposed to be like me,
right,
in another body.
I think that's interesting that you bring that up, because I've noticed this in the gay male culture a lot. I don't notice it as much in the lesbian culture, and I don't really see it in the heterosexual culture, because, well, in heterosexual culture, it's pretty much virtually impossible to do what I'm about to share. But I've noticed a predominance, I shouldn't say predominance, a lot of gay men end up in relationships with guys that look exactly like themselves. Their build, their hair, the kind of clothes they wear. And I always jokingly, and it's not just me, it's not just Rick the coming out guy bashing other gay men. And I'm not bashing you guys, I'm just making an observation. So before you start sending the hate mail, just calm down. But it's so interesting to me, because I've often said, it's like they just want to be in a relationship with themselves. And it makes me wonder if that's because they don't have a relationship with themselves.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I could pull out my photos and we could do like a video thing here on the page when this show's ready to air. And I could pull out photos of guys that all look alike. But that would be kind of sad of me to do that. it is interesting when you said that. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of reminding me of this. But I think most of it comes from all of us.
Well, but I mean, I think that's, well, so you're saying that you haven't seen it as much in lesbian culture, but I mean, I would argue to say that is who we want. Now, I think we, evolving wise or kind of like learning wise, it is better to be with someone that's opposite, because then you're going to learn. There's an edge there. They have something to provide you that you don't have. So that's kind of the benefit in my mind about relationships. But at the same time, we're like, well, I mean, do we really want to grow?
Right.
Like, I just want someone to, like, love me and be comfortable and go do fun things with, and, you know.
But don't you think that's part of the reason that we get into these spaces where we start having these tug-of-wars in our relationships? Because at first we're like, yeah, this is good, it's beautiful, it's fun, it's the Cinderella, and then suddenly, as time grows on, if we don't work on the relationship,
yeah,
things don't seem to be the way they should be, because we're just, well, I want something different now. I need something closer to who I am or whatever. When in reality, you probably don't. You're just not putting the work into the relationship you have.
Well, and my thing, like, I remember my last relationship thinking this, like, I need to get a handle on this thing that I keep feeling, or this expectation I keep having, because I'm just going to do the same damn thing with the next person, you know? And again, it's like, you're going to do that thing where you keep dating the same person, different face, but it's the same energy. It's the same, like, the same way they might treat you, or whatever it is that is your, like, thing that you do to keep from actually having to be vulnerable and feel and open your heart and all of that.
Well, you just said something very powerful that I want to make sure the listeners rehear what I'm about to say. If you don't pay attention to this, you are going to continue to repeat the pattern. Mm-hmm. You're going to date the same person. You're going to do the same mistakes. You're going to find yourself miserable, whether it's a year, 6 months, 6 weeks, 6 years down the road. You're going to discover that it's the same thing until you, A, either fix what it is that you're repeating, or come to terms with, okay, I'm repeating this, but I'm going to make it better this go around, which is partially fixing it. And it's funny because my husband is in many ways very similar to my ex-wife. Yet there's enough difference in their character and their personalities that makes it work. But I would say that 75% of some of their characteristics are exactly the same. When they get hungry, they get bitchy. When they don't want to talk about something, they clam up, you know. And when they're tired of hearing me talk, they just, you know, really have this same identical way of tuning up. So it's interesting to see this, you know. Now, those are similarities, but then it's the stuff that I bring to the relationship That is where I have to be careful with, am I repeating this pattern? Am I acting the same way when we're in conflict and all these sort of things? And I think that's what you're getting at, is helping us find the way to break the patterns that we're in.
Yeah. Because, I mean, here's the thing. Like, if we're going to talk about needs, yep. like, what do we need? What do we want? What do I want as a woman? What do I think, you know, most women want? Like, we really do want to be loved for everything that we are.
Yep.
Like, can I show you my bitchy side? Can I show you my fun side? Can I show you my weak side? Can I show you my strong side? Can I show you my don't mess with me side? You know, and are you going to still love me? Are you going to be here for me? Are you going to even, you know, the part that's like, are you going to love me for those things instead of just tolerating these things about me? And like, so that's asking for someone else to love you with everything that you have. And when we run these patterns, though, like when we do these things, it's our way of blocking. Like, we block love. You know, we don't realize that's what we're doing. But, you know, we do these things. Like, I never would speak up about anything that I wanted in a relationship. Like, I had needs, but I acted like I didn't have needs, or, you know, having needs are bad. I think that's a total epidemic with, like, women, for sure. Having needs is bad. Like, you shouldn't have needs. Your needs should come second to someone else's needs.
But I think this is something that, I mean, I have two daughters, so I see that piece. But I also see it as it's very human. But for some reason, when you have the feminine energy, and gay men, listen up, because you have it. When that feminine energy is really predominant, especially so we're talking female, and of course now I'm going to have my lesbians go, well, I'm not a femme. Oh, yeah, okay, I get it, but it's there. It does have a huge effect on us not being able to ask for what we desire and what we need. You know, some people say, oh, that need, that, well, you don't need anything. Okay, yes, I've, as a coach, I've said that numerous times to clients myself, but I always kind of caveat it with, it's not a need that's going to help you survive. It's a need that helps you thrive.
Right.
You know, that there's a difference there. But those needs and desires, when we can't talk about those things, that's when the powder keg starts to get assembled. And they stack and they stack and they stack. And suddenly one day you look in that powder keg and lo and behold, that powder keg is full and all it needs is one little spark and everything explodes. So where do you think this comes from in the feminine energy? Is it just because women, quote unquote, have been repressed throughout the ages, or do you think it's something inherently? And of course, now I'm like, okay, so Dr. Natalie, please explain.
I know. I was like, what an existential question.
Well, it is kind of one of those existential questions.
It totally is. And I think that's where my brain went to, you know, if I were to look at just kind of how, again, opposites usually are the kind of thing that creates harmony, and feminine and masculine are opposite energies. You know, again, if we're talking just energy, we're not talking about a man and a woman. We're talking about light and dark, you know, like all these kind of contrasting things that, if put together, create harmony. And so the feminine is seen as life. It's like joy. It's life. It's all of the like movement in the world. And they see masculine as more still. And so maybe there is this thing of like, again, they're the container and you fill it up with feminine energy. Like, so we have a lot, like there's a lot of emotions and a lot of like things that we need and want, and it changes all the time. Like, that's the feminine part of us. That's like always changing, always flexible, always flowing, always like, you know, can be seen a little chaotic sometimes. And
I find that interesting because as you were talking, I flashed to a online Facebook group that I belong to, and I'm not going to say who it is because it's a secret group. It's comprised of a lot of previously married men who have come out of the closet. And it's so interesting when they get frustrated about something that's going on with their, you know, where they are in their station in life, whether they're dating, whether they're having problems with an ex-wife or whatever it may be. They always caveat it by saying, so I know I'm not supposed to act this way, or I know I'm not supposed to feel this way. And then they go on to say what they are. And you know, I try not to be Mr. Coach in the group, even though every once in a while I get up on my soapbox and do that. But I always kind of laugh to myself when that caveat gets put in front of it, because there's the feminine. It's like you're apologizing for having an emotion. You're apologizing for letting something really, you know, show that you're kind of quote unquote weak, so to speak. Not that I think showing emotion is a weakness, but that's what is being portrayed, is if I do this, I'm not being quote unquote masculine enough. You know?
Right. Yeah. And yeah. Because there is something about that hasn't been valued in some ways. Like that there has been, again, valuing monetary success over fulfillment, emotional fulfillment, right? Like there's all these ways that these more kind of masculine energy traits got kind of put on the value, higher up on the value scale.
Yeah.
And the feminine ones didn't. And so, yeah, it kind of totally has a repercussion on how we show up. How do we see emotions versus the analytical side? Like, what's better? You know, oh, it's better to be analytical and just rationalize your way through things and don't feel anything. Like, what's the point of that? You know, and so...
Well, but I think that is what's interesting, as more and more women, you know, as the women's movement, you know, began to swell, and as we're still trying to, you know, kick through the glass ceiling. I'm saying this as if I'm a woman, but I am kind of, you know, I want my sisters to crash. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
But it's just amazing to me to watch, okay, so if you're going to be a woman, then now you have to act this way if you're going to kick through that glass ceiling. It's like, why? Why? You know, even to our current political climate, and, you know, watching some of the bashing that's gone on with the female candidates, you know, Hillary and, you know, Carly Fiorina and all those, you know, and I'm not going to say where I stand on this, but, you know, every time I'd hear somebody go, oh, you know, they're just so bitchy, they're so masculine, I'm like, okay, well, what does that have to do with their ability to run the country? You know, let's get real here. You know, nobody said, oh, you know, such and so, he's too feminine to run the country. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that yet. Of course, we haven't had like a gay man run for, you know, president of the United States. I'm sure as soon as that happens, we'll hear all that stuff. But, you know, I think it's those things we battle into gender constructs that begin to truly make you question, okay, what if those gender constructs didn't exist? Then what?
Oh, that's all I keep thinking when you're talking, Rick, is I think this is why we are coming to a time where, you know, this kind of wanting to attack labeling and gender kind of qualifications and boxes and all that kind of stuff. Because it's like, there's a part of it where we're thinking, none of this works anymore. Like, it's so different from years ago. Like, we don't operate like that, nor do we want to operate like that. Like, because what difference does it make, you know?
And it truly is what like difference does it make.
Yeah, like, what difference does it make? And I still remember, this is the same thing that I thought when I was, like, a teen and my brother was coming out, because he came out to me when he was like 11, 13. And even then I was kind of dealing with my own, like, oh my gosh, do I like women? And I'm bisexual and that whole thing. But I just remember at that time just thinking, what the fuck does it matter? Like, who cares who you love, you know? And it just like still 20 years later, or like 20 plus years later, I'm still like, what the does it matter?
Well, I think we're still in a space, and I mean, I know for myself, I can get on the fence either way about what it matters, but because we're human, we have to have something that quote unquote helps us sift and sort, so to speak. You know, okay, so this is this, okay, now I know how to act with them. I look forward to the day, and I may, you know, quite honestly, I don't know if I'll even be around when that day comes, but where we wouldn't even have to sift and sort. We could just say, this is who this person is. Okay, cool. That's,
yeah.
You know, this is Natalie, and that's who she is. She's Natalie. Boom, done.
Yeah, right.
But I want to kind of jump back to where we started this conversation, too. You know, it seems that women struggle to define their desires and their needs. And even once they struggle to say that, there's often, okay, well, in coming out terms, so to speak, you can't be that, or you can't desire that, or you can't want that. That
kind of
becomes the initial shutdown. So now I'd like to like overlay that into the male, gay male coming out, you know, experience of the moment you start to say, this is what I desire as a gay male, you get the same experience.
Mm-hmm.
Even as a lesbian, I mean, I know you get the same thing as a lesbian, but there's something at almost a deeper level for the gay man where, I mean, we'll just go raw and real here. It's like, okay, the minute you say you're a gay male, I'm quite sure many people in the world immediately go, oh my God, he likes to get fucked. Which is just so ludicrous to me that that's how people's minds work.
Hmm.
And that then in turn prevents many gay men from feeling like they can express themselves in any way, or they go to the opposite extreme and fully, like, over the top express themselves.
Right.
And that gets bashed. So here we are suddenly. You can't say what you need or desire either way, because now as gay men, you're pretty much in the same predicament that women have been in. And I'm saying women in the general term because I want my lesbian sisters to be included in this. Suddenly, yeah. Gay men get lopped in with all the women's struggle of you can't be who you are because that's you're a secondary, second-class type of citizen.
Right, and there's a, like, damned if you do, damned if you don't
exactly.
kind of predicament, right? Like, it doesn't matter what you do. Like, you're going to be ostracized, penalized, right. exiled, you know, punished, or whatever the thing is. But,
so I know you,
yeah,
I know
no,
you,
I think it is similar.
Yeah, it's very, very similar. And I know you do a lot of work with, I know you do work with couples. I know you do work with people one-on-one. When someone's struggling with this feeling like they can't self-express, I mean, that's really what we're talking about here,
yeah,
but saying what they
right.
really need and desire.
Yeah.
Where do you try to take them to start helping them conquer that? And I say conquer, that's probably not the right word, but it is in a way. You got to conquer the demon before
overcome,
you get
overcome. Yeah,
yeah, it's very
totally.
Much overcome. Mm-hmm. So how would you take someone into that space where they can finally begin to little steps say, this is what I really need. This is what I desire.
Literally just starting to have them say it out loud is one of the first things, because so often it lives inside of us, these desires, you know, they've never been spoken. They're just, they're thought of, they're fantasized. They're just, they don't have a voice.
Yeah.
And so there's something about vocalizing it that makes it real. And so saying it out loud, even if just to me, you know, it's like, all right, let's start here first. Say it to me. Or if, you know, there, it's not someone I'm working with, I would say just find anybody, somebody you feel safe enough with
right.
that you could say these things out loud and just, you know, get it out of your body. It's kind of the first thing. And then just like anything, it's a muscle to exercise. You just keep saying it till you become more comfortable saying it.
Yeah,
and obviously you're going to like get hit up against people that are like, yes, no, or right. have their things around it. But your antenna becomes better, though, to know who to be able to say it to. You know, maybe this person just isn't a safe person to say this with, or like, right. I know they're not going to be able to give me what I need, you know?
Right.
So why go there?
But it's interesting that that's the technique you use, because this is the same technique I use with someone who's coming to me and is like, okay, I don't know. I think I'm gay. Well, I'm not sure I'm gay. Maybe I'm bisexual. I don't know. I'm just really confused. So as we start to dig into it, one of the exercises I finally have them do is, okay, so you feel fairly confident or comfortable, whatever word we start to use, that you're gay or you're lesbian or you're
yeah,
bisexual.
Yeah.
But I want you to say it. I mm-hmm. want you to say it out loud to me.
Yeah.
And this may be the only place that you can do that right now. This may be the mm-hmm. starting point for you.
Yeah.
But it's amazing to watch. And, you know, if I'm doing face-to-face or doing a Skype, you know, session with someone, and sometimes I don't get that blessing. I just, you know, only get to hear the audio piece of this.
Yeah.
But it's amazing to hear those words flow out those first few times, because with each iteration that they say it and each repetitive time mm-hmm. they go through that, you can feel the energy and the power that they are starting to take on. And,
yep.
you know, I kind of got him like, okay, so say it again. Now say it like you mean it. Now say it like you own it. Say it like you're it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really powerful to watch them step into that, because what I know, and this is part of being seen and heard and being able to help people see and hear you, is you may be able to do this with Rick over the phone, and you may be able to do it in a Skype session, or we may be doing it face-to-face, but at some point in the very near future, you're going to be doing this with somebody that mm-hmm. you really know, not
mm-hmm.
just your coach. We have like an interesting relationship, but you've got parents and family members and all these people
yeah.
you've been doing this with for 20, 30, 40 some odd years, that you're going to have to be able to stand really resolute in who you are and be able to say it. And this is why I think this conversation is very poignant today, about how to say what you need and desire, and really understanding from a woman's perspective, how that woman's perspective can teach all of us, gay, straight, heterosexual, bisexual, whatever it is, to really start to master this. Because I don't think any of us, I don't think any of us really spend enough time saying in a very powerful, loving, productive way, this is what I desire and this is what I lovingly need in my life. We all kind of like, dip our toes in it and walk away from it.
Right. But like you said, to come from a powerful place around it. I mean, I just remember one session with someone that, you know, she wanted to get married, but she had never like admitted it or said it out loud.
Yeah.
You know, she's in her like 30s and just has gone back and forth about the whole idea. But I was like, you need to say it to me. And then my challenge to her, though, was, okay, the next person you go on a date with, first date, I want you to say, this is what I want. Mm-hmm. I ultimately want to be married. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm dating. And just the kind of owning of that, like you said, and just kind of getting her response when she came back around, because there is a place where you're choosing to stand up for your desire.
Right.
And we all want to be loved. We all want to connect. We all want to have these really meaningful, soulful relationships. We want honesty. Like, we all want the same things. We really do. We have different approaches to it, but to come out and say who you are. I remember the same thing. It took me a while to say that I'm bisexual, and it was that same thing. I was like, I barely was able to say it to myself. And then a couple of close friends that I knew that I was safe with. And then, you know, ripple, ripple, ripple. And now I'm like saying it to like thousands of people in blog posts.
Right.
You know, it's just like, it took a journey to get there.
Well, it is a journey, but I think what you've just demonstrated is a perfect example of, for all of us, first way to learn to say what you desire or need is to say to yourself what you desire or need.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, that's the thing holding us back the most, is we haven't said it to ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing this with one of my, I guess I'll call it a kind of an entrepreneurial business coaching clients, because I do that kind of work as well. And, you know, we were talking and she said, well, you know, I really want to get out of, you know, working for the company I'm working for, even though I love the company, it's a great company, but I need to be free. And I said, well, what does that look like? And she gave me a description. I said, so if you were free, what's the thing standing in the way? Well, you know, it's the money and da, da, da. I said, I'm going to challenge you there. You haven't said to yourself, this is what you really desire. You haven't said, this is what I really need. You're telling everybody else. You're telling everybody else this is what you desire and what you need. But I said, when did you sit down and say, and I'll change her name, you know, Leslie, what I desire and what I need is to be out of corporate America, running my own business, making my own pathway, feeling my own freedom without anybody else getting in the way. When have you ever said that to yourself? So why I think about it, I said, no. Thinking about it doesn't work. When have you actually stood in front of a mirror, or looked in the mirror and said, Leslie, what I desire is this, and this is why I want it. This is what I need. This is what I want to get from it. And that was a huge moment. When she said it, I then said, so now that I've challenged you to do this around this, where else in your life are you not saying what you desire and need? And literally, she just broke into tears. And I thought, I pushed the wrong button here. But what ended up coming out of her mouth is she goes, you know, I've never had a relationship with anybody where I've been able to say that. So I get into relationships. They last about 3 or 4 weeks and then goes away. And she goes, I just realized in that exercise that it's because I get to that space and all I am is a yes person. And then I either get frustrated by it or they get frustrated by it and they're like, this isn't going to work. And then I wonder why it's not going to work. It's because all I'm doing is whatever they want me to do. I'm not saying what I need. I'm not saying what I desire.
Yeah.
It was a pretty powerful moment. You know, here I am working with her on trying to, you know, go out and be an entrepreneur. But the beauty in that whole thing was that was actually at the crux of why she couldn't move herself forward.
Oh, it's so connected, Rick. It's so, and this is why, I mean, I'm just going to get on my soapbox for 5 seconds, but we invest so much money in education and business and kind of material and financial and what seems kind of a tangible success in life investments. But honestly, like if we were to invest even just a portion of that to our relationships, our connections, our communication, any of that, like our lives would be drastically different because it's the heart of everything. It's like what we all want is to have great love and great relationships, but yet we don't tend to those things. Like they are, in my mind, like highest priority, you know, it's like our relation, all of them, friends, family, clients, colleagues, you know, lovers, children, all of it. So just like my, you know, thing would be just invitation is, look to your relationships first and see like, how can I make them strong and solid and vital?
Well, I think it comes back to kind of, I think what you and Bob and I spoke about when we did your podcast weeks ago was that piece of really dialing in to each other and getting past the shame, getting past the guilt, getting past the not good enough stuff. The thing that we miss the most in any of this is all that stuff is going to be there because you're going to go into a relationship with another person. And then there's going to be something that doesn't match up. And then there's going to be something that they do different. And then you're going to learn new stuff. But the thing is if you haven't created the relationship with yourself first, all of this is going to get thrown out the window because you've got to be really tight in yourself and who you are with yourself. And when you can do that, then you can go, okay, well, Natalie and I are together, but there's bits and pieces of it that don't work. But I know that this is who I am. So now I can say, Natalie, this is who I am. This is, you're getting the real rip. And you know what? If that's going to be a game changer and if that's going to be something that you can't live with and you're going to keep trying to change in me or I'm going to keep trying to change for you, that is something that never is going to work, then let's be really honest, this isn't going to work. But you have to be so resolute in yourself to see that piece of you that this is where I'm not going to falter. This is where I'm not going to, you know, too many relationships. And I think you and I can both attest to this throughout our own experiences. Too many relationships go bad because we're trying to accommodate everything for the other person.
Right. So I'm going to loop it back to, again, our, the first thing we talked about is our needs and our desires. Yeah. If I myself don't think my needs and desires are worthy of being fulfilled, right? If I don't have that solid relationship with myself where I'm like, Natalie, all of your needs, they're amazing. They're perfect. You know, you get to have them. If I'm not there, how on earth can I be with someone else who doesn't feel like that and then, you know, either stand up for myself or like there's no way, like I can't advocate for myself if I don't think that my needs and desires are worthy. If I don't think as a person I'm worthy or my expression, you know, is okay. Like, you're right, all of that stuff.
Well, I think you kind of brought this full circle. It's interesting because, you know, you've been on the podcast before and I usually ask the question, what would be the piece of advice? But I think you just delivered it is if you can't advocate for yourself, your own needs and desires, you're not going to be able to do this coming out. You're not going to be able to do it in so many other areas of life. And it doesn't, not just the coming out piece, but I know this is what keeps so many people in the closet is they don't know how to advocate for themselves until something really big comes along, like coming out, breaking up, going through a divorce. And then suddenly you're trying to advocate for yourself when in reality, probably a lot of this could have been avoided if you'd advocated for yourself from the very get-go. Now, I'm going to caveat that for all my LGBTQ coming out people going, some of us, we couldn't have advocated from the very beginning because we only begin to really understand who we are in our gay, lesbian, bisexual selves as we get to the space where we can really understand it. Then what happens typically is we hit that Y in the road and we kind of understand who we are, but everybody else is saying you can't be that. So there are some tricky territories we're in here about this self-advocating, but I think the big message that Natalie is definitely sending with her last few words is, to self-advocate is to also self-love.
Yes. And standing for yourself.
Yeah, it's okay to do that and be that. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. Well, once again, thank you for being part of this part of my life and sharing yourself and doling out some really wonderful pieces of wisdom for my listeners today. I so appreciate you.
Thanks, Rick. I love this conversation. And again, why I love you. I love that this is so important for you.
Well, it's important because I think when we can start to have these real conversations, and whether we're talking about fighting or intimacy or having issues between each other or fighting for our rights as people with different sexual orientations, or loving someone who just can't empathize with us, just finding ways to love them, even if they can't do it. These conversations are crucial to making us a better humanity, plain and simple. So,
agreed.
So if you would like to stay in touch with Natalie, you will see her website is right here on the show page. I'm so happy to share her. She's got beautiful energy, beautiful soul. She can help you in so many ways. I'd invite you to visit her website and check her out, natalievartanian.com. And if anything's like piqued your interest over the last 30 minutes as we've been talking, I invite you to just take it in, do with it what you will for yourself. In fact, I'm not even going to talk about doing anything for me or the podcast right now. I'd rather you take in that piece of yourself and self-advocate right now and self-care, however that looks. Because right now, what you may need in your life is a little bit of self. And that is self-love to the hilt. So I'm going to just leave it there for this week. No talking about other things, and just say, just keep stepping out, stepping up, stepping in to that beautiful place of self-love and being exactly who you're meant to be in the world. I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach and the host of the Coming Out Lounge, and we'll catch you in just another few days. Take care and be well and be blessed. Hey, 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 Closet Dwellers and Coming Out Lounge listeners, I wanted to invite you to check something out. You know, for all the years that I've been a Coming Out Coach, one thing I've learned is sometimes people come to do the work with me and they only need a little bit of help to get over something very particular and very important to them. It could be reconciling their religion and sexuality. Maybe it's learning how to have the difficult conversations where they say, I'm gay. Possibly it could be, oh my God, I'm out of the closet, but now how do I do this same-sex dating and mating sort of thing? Well, what I can tell you is throughout the years, there are common things that show up over and over and over again. And what I've heard most from my clients and listeners of the podcast is, I want a way to work with you just on these particular subjects. Yay, I am so excited because I've taken the action and I've made this possible. So how do you find out about these particular programs? You go to thecomingoutcoach.com, or if you're on the show page right now listening to the podcast or have just listened to the podcast, over to the right-hand side of the podcast description, everything is an icon that says one-on-one coaching sessions. Click on that button. You'll be taken to a page that describes each of the different 9 sessions I'm offering. They are one-on-one sessions that we can do via phone, Skype, or even FaceTime. They're very action-oriented. We go right to the topic that you want to talk about. And each of these sessions also includes a copy of my book, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. So what more could you ask for? You get me for 90 minutes devoted to you, plus my book. So go check it out. See if there's something that could help you as you step out, step up, and step in to living your powerful truth. Take care. I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach. I look forward to working with you.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more. And tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.